Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Blue Cross Blue Shield members who see doctors at Tufts Medical Center may have to find a new physician starting in January. The state's largest insurer and the hospital have reached an impasse in contract talks. Blue Cross sent letters today warning patients about what this might mean for them. And health policy reporter Martha Biebinger begins our story right here at WBUR.
To get a first-hand view on the Tufts Blue Cross dispute, I walked into one of our glass-walled studios where a colleague had just finished a newscast.
Mr. Faniff?
Yes, dear. Yes.
The tape recorder's rolling.
Dave Faniff, an anchor at WBUR, is a Blue Cross member who had surgery this summer to remove a brain tumor. Now he's receiving radiation.
If it comes back, radiation will not be an option again. So the only option at that point is more surgery. And the team that performed the surgery is at Tufts. They're the ones that have been in there already. They're the ones who've written the notes. They're the ones that, if I have to go back, they're the ones I want doing it.
But if Tufts and Blue Cross cannot come to an agreement on the contract that expires January 17th, then Faniff and 88,000 other Blue Cross members would have a month to find a new doctor. Pregnant women and patients with chronic illnesses would have 3 months.
And that's absolutely unacceptable. Get to it, guys, and work it out.
The dispute is, of course, about money. Tufts Medical Center says its latest request is for a 3% increase each year for the next 3 to 5 years. Blue Cross says Tufts doctors are willing to take less, but that Tufts wants much higher rates for hospital services. Blue Cross Executive Vice President Jay McQuaid says Tufts is already making a 15% profit on hospital charges.
They're earning a profit when they care for our members. They're paid comparably to other teaching hospitals in eastern Massachusetts. And they're seeking rate increases that are inconsistent with what other hospitals have already accepted.
Tufts Medical Center CEO Eric Beyer has some problems with that analysis. He says Tufts has a larger share of Medicaid patients, on which all hospitals lose money, than do the comparable hospitals to which McQuaid refers. And Beyer says Tufts has historically received significantly less for care that is just as good as higher-paid competitors. But insurers are under increasing pressure from Governor Patrick and employers to cut costs. So how, in this climate, can Beyer justify increases that are higher than other hospitals?
We absolutely believe that our ask is completely in line with what the governor and other people have asked for. We are a very efficient provider. Our physicians have earned what they've been paid by being efficient. We absolutely believe we are doing the right thing for the people of this Commonwealth.
Three statewide employer groups disagree, saying that while Tufts Medical Center provides great care, businesses will likely side with Blue Cross in efforts to hold down health care costs. Eileen McEnany is with Associated Industries of Massachusetts.
There are no good guys or bad guys. It's just we have to learn to do things differently and to provide care with a finite amount of financial resources.
There's widespread agreement that as the Commonwealth struggles to do that, provide quality care while holding down costs, these disputes may become more common. For what it's worth, Tufts and Blue Cross reached a similar impasse almost 3 years ago and eventually settled a new contract. If they don't resolve this dispute, Dave Faniff and tens of thousands of other Blue Cross members will have to find a new place for care early next year. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Martha Biebinger.
Well, this week, the sports pages continue to be dominated by the sexual abuse scandal surrounding former Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky.
Yesterday, we learned that 10 more alleged victims have come forward since Sandusky's indictment on November 5th. On Monday, we also heard from Sandusky himself, who told NBC's Bob Costas he was innocent of the charges against him in the 40-count indictment.
Joining us now, as he does on most Wednesdays, is the host of NPR's Only a Game, Bill Littlefield. Hi there, Bill.
Hi, Meghna.
Well, there is a lot to talk about here, but let's first listen to the part of that interview on NBC with Jerry Sandusky that Anthony was talking about. Here's what the former assistant coach had to say.
I have horsed around with kids. I have showered after workouts. I have hugged them, and I have touched their leg without intent of sexual contact.
Are you sexually attracted to young boys, to underage boys?
Am I sexually attracted to
Yes.
underage boys? Sexually attracted, you know, I enjoy young people. I love to be around them. But no, I'm not.
So, Bill, you know, I heard that exchange, and then I went and actually saw it online on Rock Center, which is the show that it showed up on, and it does not fail to continue to stun me that Sandusky said what he said. I mean, what is this, a case study in denial? I don't know, but what do you make of it?
I found it exceedingly creepy, and I'm not sure that a man charged with 40 counts of sexual abuse of children should be the one deciding what's appropriate. That strikes me as exceedingly bizarre.
I was wondering what he was even doing, like giving an interview to begin with, Anthony.
It's really bizarre. And Bill, let me ask you about this. Frank DeFord, NPR's Frank DeFord, had a commentary today essentially arguing that part of the reason Sandusky's alleged abuse went on for so long, more than 15 years, mm-hmm. has a lot to do with the nature of football itself. This idea that it's a sport for tough guys and they just can't imagine or accept that anyone involved in the sport would do something like this, could do something like this. What do you think?
Yeah, Frank's a friend, and I like his work, and I've admired his work for many years. He seemed to be saying somehow that the abuse was more likely to happen in football, and that the cover-up had to do with protecting sort of the idea, the image of football as a manly sport, making American men stronger than anybody else, that sort of thing. I kept thinking as I heard that commentary about all the instances of child abuse that have happened within the context of other sports, whether gymnastics or swimming or ice skating or any number of other sports in which coaches have taken advantage of their authority over children in order to commit acts of child abuse, sexual abuse. I don't think we're talking about sports here. I think we're talking about the culture within a given sport. I think we're talking about criminal acts committed by people who take advantage of their position of authority. A priest has a position of authority. A teacher has a position of authority. A coach, likewise, has a position of authority, no matter what sport he or she happens to be working in.
No, clearly it's a story that goes. It's an issue that goes well beyond the universe of sports. No doubt this story is going to stick around for a while, but let's move on to the ongoing NBA lockout. What's the latest here, Bill?
Well, the latest is we wait to see what the courts make of the suits brought by the players against the NBA. These suits, of course, are being brought under the auspices not of the National Labor Relations Act, but of the Antitrust Act. The contention, to be very perhaps too oversimplified about it, is that the lockout prevents the players from participating in their profession. If the court goes along with that, we could be looking at triple damages, and we could be looking at billions of dollars owed to the players by the league because of the amount of money that they did not make and will not make if this season doesn't transpire.
And, Bill, you know, it takes two sides in a negotiation, and I wonder, does this look like a collective failure by the league and the players to you, or does one side bear more of the blame than another?
Well, the second part of the question is easier for me to answer. The owners locked the players out. The players agreed to take a much smaller portion of the basketball-related income than they had been taking under the previous collective bargaining agreement. The owners most recently have said, take this deal, which we are putting on the table, or the next deal is going to be a lot worse. That doesn't sound like collective bargaining to me. That sounds like an ultimatum, which is the antithesis of collective bargaining. So now the players have basically said, okay, collective bargaining didn't work. We're going to go this other route, which is basically we're going to stop being a union, we're going to become a trade association, and we're going to sue you under the provisions of the antitrust law.
And what do you think?
If my background as a former union president was apparent in that answer, I don't apologize.
And very quickly, Bill, are we going to get a season at all, abbreviated?
I think it's less and less likely every day. I cannot really quite see it. But, you know, lawyers sit down to talk. Maybe they'll come to an agreement.
Well, lots of trouble in the world of sports, but Bill Littlefield, a WBR sports commentator and host of NPR's Only a Game, you can hear him each Saturday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., and also, of course, most Wednesdays right here on Radio Boston. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you, Meghna.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.